Go ahead and get started.
First off on our agenda was an update on Discovery Square. Stephen, do you know who is going to be here?
Lisa. She said she was going to be here.
So, well, I think in the interest of time, we'll move to our second item and come back when we're ready. So, Mr. Schmidt, you want to lead off on the music department review?
Good afternoon, Council. Thank you very much. I have with me today President Bertioli, the president of the Music Board. Also, a couple of other board members, Marty Apps, Steve Arwall, and Mary Jo Briggs. Being sensitive to your agenda tonight, I'm just going to hit some of the high points because the facts and figures are in the detailed summary that you've already received and also in the annual report. So before I continue with my report, Carol Bertioli, would you like to make a few comments at this time?
No, just
want to take this.
Go ahead.
Just
keep going. Go ahead.
Thank you. So thanks for having us here today, for having me certainly here today as president of the board. I appreciate that. And I'm happy to share with you and the other members of the board our perspective on the work that the City Department of Music, the Music Department does and has accomplished this year. I'm going to speak for the board members here and the people who couldn't be here, but we are very proud of what this department does and what it does for the city and how we represent our constituents, the other citizens in Rochester. We take very seriously that we act as the city's voice, even though we're not elected. We talk about what do our constituents say about the things that we're deciding and how we go about doing things. And we also take great pride, as many of you might note, in advocating for the department and its accomplishments. So I just want to say that to my friends over there. And Steve is clearly going to speak about more of the details about what's going on, but I'm going to highlight a few of things that are real near and dear to the board's heart. First of all, we are extremely excited and extremely engaged in the fact that we are facing the 25th anniversary of Down by the Riverside. That, I think, is just great news. 7 weeks of great music and great community engagement. We've had a wonderful ad campaign with the 2-5 showing up all around town. Great working with Think Bank to do that. And beyond that, we've also had just an amazing set of regional and statewide notice of Down by the Riverside. So we're getting some really good, first of all, the Current is the media sponsor for 4 of the 7 concerts this year, which is great news for us. Good noise in the Twin Cities about Down by the Riverside for marketing. Lots of local media, some earned media, some owned, so earned. They're just taking it up. We don't have to tell them anything. They're saying, cool, look what's happening with us. And some, of course, we pay for some of the advertisement. But the percentage is much higher of the earned media, and I think that's really good for how people respect and enjoy Down by the Riverside, and then, of course, our music board and our department. This year, the bands are trending younger as we move to continue to meet our mission of appealing to diverse audiences. So we've got the millennials at the top of our mind as we program things, and that's very important to us. Down by the Riverside, most recently, as Mr. Campion might share, it was a finalist in the Med City Beat, Rochester's Finest. The other finalists for the community event category. The other finalists were the Farmers Market and Rochester's Fest, and Thursdays on First and Third. Now, Thursdays on First and Third watch, but, you know, we program their music, so we're going to take some. So we got 2 pieces of that piece, so we're real pleased. And about 6,000 people voted on it, and so we're glad to have that kind of representation, and that was nice. We're looking for great fun this summer as we celebrate this 25 years of Mayo. And we'll host another 60,000 people across the summer, just at Down by the Riverside, not including who will host at Thursdays on First and Third. So that's very exciting for us. Of course, we do more than the summer concerts. We also do the indoor concert seasons. And 2016, 2017 is going to be a challenging year, full of opportunities, as we like to say. Mindful of the impact that the Civic Center construction has on our planning. We are good for the fall concerts. Those will be at Presentation Hall. We have contracts in the works. And we're creatively planning for the winter-spring concerts. Because Presentation Hall will be closed in the winter-spring of 2017, we have to either choose artists that can be better heard in larger places, the arena or the exhibit hall, wherever it might be, or think of other places that we can go into. On the bright side, we're good at what we do. Certainly the department is good at what we do. And so even with those programming challenges and potential revenue reductions, because we might have to have one fewer concert or change some of the venues or whatever, we're being very prudent in how we use our dollars. We're planning ahead, We're not asking for supplemental funding, and Steve will speak to that again, because we're going to take into account the financial impact of the construction on our program and make sure that we can meet the needs of our audiences and our constituents and the reality that, you know, Civic Center is changing, and we have to approach that in appropriate ways. We're still going to continue the opera concerts and use city space as well as we possibly can. Speaking of space, it's inevitable that there will be talk of the Chateau when one talks about space for music and arts, and so I'm going to speak to that now because I can. The people that we talked to as board members expressed great enthusiasm about the possibility of the Chateau becoming a multi-use performing arts center. There's lots of good work about that. There's lots of good word about that. And certainly for the music department, adding additional space for live performance in Rochester is really smart. The Chateau in its size can fill the gaps that we currently face. Presentation hall seats 1,100 people. And then you have to go down to much different places for smaller concerts, and that goes into churches and bars, and we're not particularly inclined to do that for a bunch of reasons. So a nice auditorium, a nice space that fits about 500 people would be great and can be programmed nicely and consistently and frequently. Different audiences will also respond to the smaller space and the smaller venue, and that allows us, again, to keep broad to our audiences and respect the diversity of the audiences in the city as we think about music and the arts. And so we're hopeful that the city moves forward with the Chateau and thinking about it as a performing arts space, a multi-use performing arts space. So those are the three big topics for the music department this past year and going into 2016, 2017. The 25th down by the riverside, concert planning during the construction of the Civic Center, and how the city is moving forward with the Chateau Theater. There's one other topic that I want to talk about, though, because Steve won't. And I want to talk about Steve and his department. I mean, he doesn't get a lot, Laurel, so I get to do this now. So Steve and his team do an amazing job of the curation and management of music and arts for this city. You know that he was named Arts Person of the Year by the Post Bulletin this year, a well-deserved honor. But he's also playing a leadership role working with the Chateau Task Force and the city administrator. There was an email Steve shared with me, and I'm going to share with you, from Patrick Sieb, and the subject line was, "You were my hero," because of how he managed to do the RFP process and those kinds of things with grace and aplomb and meeting the needs of all. And Patrick said, you know, this would be a good thing to follow as you move on. Is he blushing really well now?
Not well enough now.
Great. Again, this four-person department just continues to do amazing work. They program more than 100 concerts per year at various locations, at Mayo Park, at First and Third, certainly at Presentation Hall, and all the concerts that get programmed out in the school districts, and we have our artist in residency program in the springtime. So they go to 12, 14 different places, libraries, schools, across the week. Dina just goes crazy, but it's well fun for me as I watch, not so much for her, perhaps. And it's not just, you know, presenting a concert. It all starts with, you know, choosing the artist, contract negotiations, working with the artists as they come to town, marketing the concerts, acting as stage crew, evaluating the concerts so that we can get grants to bring in the more and more artists, and all of those things. And these people do it just amazingly effectively. And it's just, the president of the board, I'm proud to be able to work with them. I think our board members will speak to that as well. And even though they have to work with a very supportive, if not boisterous board, they still work with us, and God love them for that. So we are proud as board members to serve the department, to serve the city, and I will let Steve speak to more interesting things than I have.
Well, thank you, Madam President.
You're my hero.
In the interest of time, I'm just going to hit some of the high-level things. As always, if you should have questions or concerns, or you need me to drill down, please don't hesitate. Just a couple of facts and figures. Last fiscal year, we supported 98 distinct services and served over 315,000 citizens and visitors. We've now ended 26 of the last 27 fiscal years with an operating surplus. When I began my tenure with the city of Rochester back in 1989, I inherited a deficit of over $165,000. It is because of the great work of this department, previous music boards, and previous councils that we were able to retire that deficit. And now that we have accumulated an operating surplus, which makes it possible for us to plan future seasons, book events going out into the future, sometimes crossing fiscal years, and to stand by those agreements. I expect that Riverside Concerts, the music department, will end fiscal 2016 again in the black. The estimated economic impact of the music department last fiscal year was over $7 million, and of our audiences, that was over $6 million alone. We're on target to meet or exceed those amounts in the current fiscal year. Again, the council is aware, because it did approve the contract, that we successfully renegotiated our agreement with the Rochester Downtown Alliance, and we continue to provide the music services associated with Thursdays on 1st and 3rd for 2016, 17, and 18. Last fiscal year, the music department generated nearly $106,000 in revenue for the Mayo Civic Center. And we successfully renegotiated our concert sponsorship agreement with Think Mutual Bank. They will continue to be our title sponsor. And so you will start seeing again the Think Bank Down by the Riverside concert series for 2017, 2018, and 2019. As Carol mentioned, booking our Riverside Live series, those are our indoors events that happen at the Civic Center, are on hold for fiscal 2017. While we will continue to seek out events that are appropriate, that we can hold in other facilities that could range from the Chateau to the auditorium at the Civic Center to the Kurt Taylor Arena, our commitment to quality and access for our audience is that we have to do our events in right-sized venues. We will continue to do that. Now, while this state of affairs will affect our ability to generate revenue in the ticket sales line items, concert sponsorships, and certain grants, we have planned for this eventuality. And we're not asking for any supplemental funding. As we put together next year's budget, we will manage those things on the fly. And again, I assure you that we will continue to manage public resources diligently. We will continue to have a surplus and a carryover for the next two fiscal years. This could be advantageous because it will continue to build our reserve, and it will create money that the music board may be able to tap to undertake certain pilot project programming if, that's a big if, called upon to do so in the Chateau, and to support events that may, again underscore may, take place in that venue if the city and the council decides to proceed with the adaptive reuse of that space. Another challenge is that staff capacity is indeed an issue for the department. It would be difficult for us to implement new or expand existing programs and services, and for me as the general manager of the department, to continue to provide such a high level of support for the Chateau project without additional staff resources. But we're not asking for additional staff resources at this time. Another thing I'd like council to be aware of is when the time comes for us to build or acquire a patio cover for the Mayo Civic Center, it's critical that that system be designed to accommodate Down by the Riverside concert needs. Specifically, it has to cover the stage footprint, it has to have the ability to carry sound equipment and lighting equipment, and it has to provide rain protection. We've spent so far over the last three fiscal years almost $75,000 to rent one of those systems. We could have purchased one for $100,000, but we weren't ready to do that. And we continue to make arrangements to rent the system that we need to get us through the summer. Another point, please, if council determines that the Chateau Theater is to be a municipally staffed and programmed venue, and if, again underscore if, the music department is called upon to manage the space, several staff full-time positions and a number of part-time positions would be need to be budgeted for. But again, we are not requesting any additional budget for additional staff people at this time. And when we put together the budget for fiscal 2017, you can expect to see no staff requests from the music department. With that as introduction, I'd be happy to entertain any questions, council might have.
All right. Excellent report. I think civic music, as with some of our other civic services, are much appreciated by our community. They certainly add a flavor to the things happening in the city of Rochester that are just outstanding. I'm very pleased with the financials that I saw, and especially appreciative. You're not asking for any more staff or dollars. I like that. So, with that in mind, Mr. Hildebrandt.
Just want to say Steve does a lot more than just the music. He's assisting Ardell and myself and the rest of the committee in the Chateau. Being there, he's been very valuable to, at least in my feeling, in helping us get to the point where we are right now. Remember last week, we had the discussion and the approval of a contractor to come in to help us figure out that facility, and Steve was a big help in helping doing that, and Patrick, and I don't mean Jane Beisel, I think we're a part of the subcommittee that helped narrow that down. Did an excellent job, so I want to thank Steve, and the fact that even though the music looks as great as it does, he's also helping us and contributing in other ways to help the city move forward. So thank you, Steve, and thank you for the music
department. All right, and Mr. Wojak.
Appreciate the work as always. I do think that we as a council need to take up this the stage cover issue at some point. I mean, we heard that we're spending $25,000 a year, and I don't think any of us are planning on getting rid of down by the riverside anytime soon. So, you know, I certainly hope that the folks that we have looking at issues at the Civic Center keep civic music in mind with that. And it seems like when your payback period is less than the current sponsorship contract is, maybe we ought to be getting serious about purchasing one.
All right. Anyone else? Questions, comments? Mr. Mayor.
Well, great report. And Carol, I appreciate you by a lot, but I used to give those accolades. when I was president of the music board, going back, I would just say, amen to all of that. That's so good. And we are fortunate to have that. I think Down by the Riverside is just a very unique and very special event because you have all walks of life come down there and all enjoying great entertainment for the same. I wish people would throw in a few more bucks when the basket gets passed around, but they don't. Steve, on the sponsorship, now you mentioned the current is sponsoring some. Yes. Is that that's kind of in kind by the media, probably not financial?
Right, that's a media trade out primarily.
Okay.
And there are some sponsorship considerations that we give to Minnesota Public Radio in exchange for that type of coverage.
And this next one I probably should know myself, but what kind of support are we getting? You know, you always got to say, you know, some of this is supported by the legacy funds in the state of Minnesota, Minnesota State Arts Board. I'm on that board, but how have we done with getting grants through that?
We've done well. We've been competitive in terms of the group that we're in, in terms of being a group-free grantee organization. But the State Arts Board is suffering from the budget creep and growth of field. So while we continue to compete very well in terms of merit, mm-hmm. the formula funds that we get are actually being decreased because there are more Group 3 organizations coming into the system. But we're still upwards of $50,000 in legacy funding from the State Arts Board alone. We receive an additional $10,000 in legacy support from the Southeastern Minnesota Arts Council each year. Mm-hmm. And we receive about $3,500 in other flow-through legacy funding, from other partners who are funded by legacy amendment funding.
So now we have a three-year contract with Think Bank?
We do. The new term begins next year.
Oh, next year.
Next year, correct.
So, okay. Well, we're looking forward to this 25th season, and you probably aren't ready to announce the last concert until this Thursday, huh?
We won't hear our friends in the media here. They are. I would prefer that you wait until Thursday.
Okay.
But if you see, go on the internet, I wouldn't deny if you ask me a specific question.
We won't tell anybody.
So what I tell
When people ask me, I tell them, you know, our meetings are recorded, and you could go online and find out.
Hasn't happened.
That's
so, and I see, I don't think Public Works is here, but how are we doing on event parking in our ramps on Sundays?
As far as I know, it continues to be free.
Okay. I look forward to contributing to that basket through some fair parking fees.
Thank you very much.
All right. Anyone? Mr. Ruska.
Steve and Carol, thank you guys for everything you do and all your board members. I think in the past I've asked a few tough questions as we represent people that are asking us those things. And hopefully you understand that that's our job to do, and we certainly support what you guys are doing and what you're bringing here. So the only tough question I could ask you today is, I was jotting notes when you were talking about some of the things, and revenue for the Civic Center, did you say $106,000?
$106,000, Councilman, yes.
That's what you said. Okay. I just wanted to make sure I got that right. So, like, right. Again, thank you for everything, and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
All right. Anyone else? Mr. Campion.
I would just also add, along with all the other accolades, I think, particular watching the rollout of this year's kind of anniversary 25th down by the riverside has been really something, right? Something we can watch, and I as a city organization, I think we can take great pride in how well coordinated that has been. And I always say there's a few things the city does that come up on the Facebook and Twitter. Some of them were much maligned for, but I see down by the riverside come up, and it's always unanimously something people are excited about. So good luck, I guess, personally, and I'm sure for the rest of the council, and thanks for the support.
Pray for good weather, please.
I'll make it real quick because so many people have already said it, but I've told you privately, and I'll tell you publicly again how outstanding I feel that you and your staff and the business of the board serves this community, and I just want to thank you.
Thank you very much for your support.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right, we'll move back to the top of our agenda, and we have Ms. Clark and Mr. Sieb here to talk about Discovery Square.
Patrick, grab that laptop and just use it. You got it? I got it.
We have a hard time coming around for you. Those of you that prefer hard copy. Thanks for the invitation, everybody. Gary, Steve, and I had talked briefly, maybe a month or so ago, about perhaps bringing periodic updates to this group as we start to march through DMC during this implementation phase. So today, we thought it would be very helpful, as Discovery Square comes about, to give you a little sense of the strategy that's behind Discovery Square as we start to move this forward. Discovery Square, as you all know, is more than just buildings. It's about a place and programs and space and buildings. What we're doing is putting a strategy around Discovery Square. Mayo Clinic is working on its two blocks right now, and you know that they're working on a feasibility study and trying to work that through the Mayo system, but it's more than that. The Discovery Square has many champions already involved in it, and we wanted to highlight those and honor those. For the past 6 months or so, we've been working very hard with a few different groups. Certainly the local groups, the entrepreneurs, local organizations that are involved in this space, whether it be bioscience, technology, innovation in general. We've also been partnering with statewide groups such as Medical Alley, Greater MSP, Treehouse, other organizations at the state level that we're learning from and starting to partner with, because we're all going to be working on this together across the state to drive organizations and business and entrepreneurs and innovators and investors to the Rochester area in what we're calling Discovery Square. And of course, we've been at the national level too, looking across the nation to figure out what works, what doesn't work, how can we learn from others across the nation to build Discovery Square. So today we want to honor all the great things that are already going on in Rochester. Many of those people are here today in this room and helping with us and conversing with us daily on what this could become. And at the same time, we want to make sure that we put this all into one strategic plan and construct, if you will. So for the first time, we're trying to gather all of these groups and entities and organizations and putting together what we call the strategy for Discovery Square, meaning multiple blocks in the downtown area of the DMC plan. So the first slide is really just talks about this will be a differentiator for Rochester. We've been talking about it for the past couple of years as DMC's moving through. We believe that this will be the generator for jobs, generator for economic value. It will be a differentiator for Rochester. As simple as that, it's basically a new brand to Rochester, so we'll be introducing what Discovery Square means, we're promoting it, marketing it. It's not just buildings, and it's not just geography, it's creating this place that we call Discovery Square. As I said, this will be our engine for growth and diversification in the DMC plan in general. This is one of the priority areas that have been noted by the DMCC board. And it really leverages, and we are working hand in glove with Mayo Clinic on this, it leverages Mayo's research, its education, and its practice. So I'm going to ask Patrick to talk about sort of the key pillars that we're working on. And then we want to talk about something that's very exciting and coming forward, which you already know about, the Bioscience Conference that's coming forward in June.
So with that, what we're going to talk about is the role that we see emerging for ourselves really around developing the physical environment, the culture, the connections and relationships, and the promotion and marketing. Those are really the sort of the robust strategy that we are developing as a role for our organization. Sort of think of it as the hardware and the software that makes this engine of redevelopment work. As we have, Lisa mentioned, we've spent a lot of time in the startup and entrepreneur community here in Rochester and outside this marketplace. And as we've tried to organize our thinking, it's really fallen into these five categories. Now, there's lots of ways to slice and dice this. This is how we've organized it. It's really looking at what are five pillars of success that we have seen in other communities that really are trying to develop an entrepreneurial ecosystem. And I'll talk about each one of these five briefly: space and place, human capital, innovation culture, access to ideas, and capital resources. It's really what is the entrepreneurial ecosystem that we need to create in order to develop this concept called Discovery Square. So space and place really talks about not a sort of monolithic approach, but really what is the continuum of physical environments that startup communities, successful startup communities have. So incubator spaces that are more programmed with support services, co-working spaces that are inexpensive, fun, flexible, social networking, the idea that there are spaces that people interact with one another on a more casual basis, and technology resources, whether it's 3D printing, virtual reality, wet lab fabrication, commercial kitchens, the sort of physical devices that are needed to support startups. And then the kind of spaces that allow for business growth over time, businesses that graduate from one environment to other environments. And the importance of public spaces, whether they are internal to buildings or out in the public domain, public spaces that are welcoming and attractive and entertaining. And housing options that support live-work environments, sort of a new housing style.
I think the one that we most, that we think about the most right now in Rochester is the Bioscience Technology, the Bioscience Center. Gary Smith is here, he's very involved in that. But this gives you a sense of what more can happen in downtown Rochester and how we will build from that and honor that in terms of what's been happening and kind of move it to that next level.
So with each of these slides, we talked briefly about what we see our role to be. In this case, assess current and anticipated options and understand gaps, create tools, incentives, and strategies to fill those gaps. So Rochester is on a trajectory. If you do a 5-minute walk from this place right here, you would come across a half a dozen or more of the kinds of spaces that we're talking about, some of which have been around for a long time, like the public library or the bio business center, more recently the space above Grand Rounds and the Conley Mass Building and the Cube. These are all examples of the kind of co-working collaboration spaces that that we think are important and that seem to be successful elsewhere and are really growing organically here in Rochester. And we talk about social networking, the importance of social gathering places where people from across industries and expertise and fields interact with each other. The Rochester Art Center and patios in downtown, coffee shops. These are the kind of environments that entrepreneurs look for. And we have a lot in hand here, and there's more that's coming. So a second pillar we talk about is human capital. And again, if you ask, there's a lot of different answers about what kind of human capital do we need, what kind of talent do we need. Technical talent, people who can do the work, scientists and artists and engineers and makers, researchers, entrepreneurs, serial entrepreneurs, people who have done this before, who are willing to mentor others. Service support, legal, accounting, and marketing, those that specialize particularly in startup and new company development. Experienced executives, people who can take an idea and a product and bring it to market, people who have executive skill around capital acquisition, simply building a business. And key anchor partners, like universities, who really provide sort of a core to this work. Again, we talk about our roles, working with community leaders to ensure that the systems and programs are in place to grow, attract, and retain a diverse range of talent.
There's so many groups in Rochester, as you all know, working in the workforce space right now, and frankly across the state and the nation. And there's great efforts going on, like the Chamber's doing some great work, the Workforce Center, the education partners are all working together to really create this talent pipeline, if you will, that we're going to need for some of this. And so we're helping to coordinate a lot of that effort and making sure that we're all facing the same direction and not duplicating efforts and really trying to grow this.
An innovation culture. This is the idea of having an environment that supports, promotes, and celebrates innovation. Workplace policies that encourage innovation. We've used as a milestone to talking about a change in policy at Mayo that allow for physicians and scientists to be involved in the companies that get started by IP they develop. But there's probably a whole range of policies that need to be considered if one really wants to affect change in the culture in this community, not just at Mayo, but elsewhere. Networking and education programming. I think if one were to map out the number of programs and events 5 years ago, you could probably count on one hand the number of such events. And today there are there's probably three or four a week going on that provide coaching and mentoring and education and information to people interested in developing and starting their businesses. Competitions and public events, competitions that celebrate and give credit to innovators, risk takers. Boot camps, the idea of deep immersion to help people develop technical skills. So our role is to lead and support efforts to become a community which promotes, rewards, and celebrate innovators. Just a slide that shows a smattering of the kinds of things that we're talking about. TEDx, the weekly tech meetup, global entrepreneurship. Rochester is the only city in Minnesota that has had a global entrepreneurship week, international event, but Rochester is the only city in Minnesota that's done that. Rave, Mayo's Think Big Challenge, BioAM. These are just a set of examples, and there are a lot more. Startup Weekend, Youth Startup Weekend, Technovation. So there's a lot happening already, and this can be supported and encouraged going forward. A fourth pillar, we talk about access to ideas. Rochester is an idea-rich community. We have a well-educated workforce that comes from all over the world. Mayo and IBM are centers for that. And so how do we work with how do we help support policies that connect idea generators with one another and with the tools and resources to translate those ideas to practice? Emphasis on translational, sort of practical application. The fifth pillar we talk about is capital resources, having access to capital. It's essential to encourage and retain startups, and it's critical that that capital, as much as possible, is local. We know of lots of examples of businesses that have started up, and the venture capital comes from outside this market, and that capital wants the business to be located nearby. And I think that we need to start developing our own local sources. Crowdsourcing, a new opportunity that's emerging that allows for crowdsourcing for equity investment, angel. There's effort going on to develop angel funds. Venture capital, local venture capital supported lending, like the kind of work that Smith and Ready already do. So it's really to look at our current continuum and depth of financial resources to support business startups, benchmark against other like communities, identify gaps, and develop strategies to fill those gaps. There's a lot of people in this community working in this space around the state, and we consider them all partners as we move forward. We hope to add value to the work that's already going on and take it to the next level. So that's really a very quick presentation of the kind of our emerging strategy around how we support this concept known as Discovery Square, how we add value to the current work going on here, and how we position it as a unified approach. Just to wrap up, using 21st century strategies to grow a startup and entrepreneur environment to attract talent, capital, new businesses, and fuel Rochester's economic engine. We do want to talk about one sort of tactical but very important initiative that we're involved with. And it's coming up soon, the 2016 Bio International Conference. This is the largest gathering of influential leaders from the medical industry. It will be in San Francisco this year. We will be using this opportunity to introduce the Mayo Discovery Square vision. We have targeted private sessions with key individuals and organizations, a set of private meetings over the 3 days that we will be there. And we'll also be data gathering and testing the Rochester value proposition. So we think there are certain value propositions about Rochester. We're going to test that out with the marketplace, like the access to an airport with the second largest FedEx hub in the country, access to Mayo, of course, and a range of other things that we think are value propositions. We're going to test that out with industry leaders at Bio. I call this Team Rochester, DMC, Mayo, the Chamber, Ready, City of Rochester, D, University of Minnesota, Medical Alley are all part of the team that have been working to develop our strategy while at Bio. And it's important that we have a full range of representation at this in San Francisco. The mayor has participated in this in prior years. So I'll leave with that and welcome questions on the overall strategy or about the specific initiative.
It's a really, just to wrap up on the Bio, every state seems to have a presence at the Bio conference, the international week. There's a very large Minnesota presence. And interesting, this year the state has really asked DMC to provide leadership to that, and that's actually a great nod to Rochester to say we know there's something big going on down there, so provide some great leadership to this effort this year. It'll be very targeted, and Mayor, your participation has always been welcome in the past, and sounds like this year you're unable to attend. So. Okay.
I think very interesting that you would end with this particular slide. I think over the last few years, the last decade, Rochester has come to realize its role in not only our nation, but truly a global economy. It's becoming extremely competitive, and I think we're all trying to do the right things to grow our community in the ways we would like. I agree with you that we've had a fair amount of success attending prior gatherings of the Bio International Conference. It's
There have been examples where we have attracted new technology, new business ventures to Rochester, and I think that's benefited our community overall. I think the other comment I would make is it truly is a partnership, what we're trying to accomplish with Destination Medical Center. You've listed several of the leaders up there, the constituent agencies, but it truly does envelop virtually everyone in our community, and many businesses look to benefit from our involvement. One of the questions that's been brought to my attention is how can the City of Rochester actively participate in this endeavor? And I know you've said the mayor has attended arm-in-arm with the Mayo Clinic and others in past years. And one of the questions I'd want to put out to the council as we consider our discussion here today is, can we, I would advocate that we also continue to participate if the mayor himself or a member of the council would hopefully choose to participate so that we can actively engage with the other partners and then reach out to a number of institutions across the nation. So those are my opening comments. Mr. Campion, you raised
your hand. On that same note, 2 weeks ago, DMC kind of sent me this email that started this little discussion about, you know, what's the appropriate way to come forward. So I really appreciate those words leading into this. You know, what I didn't want it to look like is any particular individual deciding we're, as a city, going to back this. I thought it would be really important if we're, as a council, want someone to go to the conference that we make that decision as a group and kind of support the involvement of an individual in this. And I think President Staver did a great job of teeing it up. I am available to go. I would be willing to go on our behalf if that was the council's desire. But I also understand it's one of those financial decisions that have come up historically, and we want to make sure we're using the resources correctly. So threw that out there. I am available to go and would be willing to do so if that was your leisure.
Mr. Ruska.
Are we budgeted for that, to go have somebody go up from the...
Do it on a contingency without any problem.
We've done it in the past for...
I know our health's gone every year pretty much here for a while, so I guess...
It's been a really important event for us. I, you know, kind of got our foot in the door with some of these things. Gary Smith is usually gone, and usually a person's gone with him, typically the mayor, so
right.
We've always thought it was a good thing.
Well, I think it makes sense for our elected body to have someone representing us, and I appreciate the years that the mayor has done this. I would support Councilmember Campion attending. I think it's a good opportunity for a newer council member to kind of see the big picture here and get involved, and help sell our city and to partner with the leadership team that's there, so I'd certainly support that.
And I appreciate the comment and question. I think we do need to be more deliberate in how we attend various events and make sure we're being very strategic. And I think this one happens to be a good one. I myself would love to have attended, but I have some commitments with the League of Minnesota Cities, so I unfortunately cannot attend in June. And I applaud Mr. Campion for at least raising his hand.
It's like other two, 3 weeks from now. I have nothing going on.
Right, yeah.
That one comment. Also, I think to think beyond just this conference in June, there will be more. As we start to bring Discovery Square forward, we're going to need to have a very large presence throughout the United States for sure, because what we're doing is competing with some really incredible cities, and we need to make sure that we are very present. And I think having the city represented, it won't be everything, I promise, but it'll be the big ones that I think we should have a city representation there, as well as some other community members, depending on the topic and depending on the event.
And I don't think this is completely unprecedented. City of Rochester has always participated in many cases in a leadership role. League of Minnesota Cities, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, the Minnesota Chamber. So we do try to reach out beyond our city borders, realizing the potential and value that comes from interacting with other communities. So this is just another avenue, I think. So again, I don't think it's unprecedented. Mr. Mayor or anyone else?
Well, it's worthwhile. There's no question. And you know, sometimes that title mayor, that Gary Smith can attest to that. Gary used to put together a pretty good list of folks that we would visit oftentimes in the their state, which is, as was said, you know, it's virtually every state is there in about 18 or 20 foreign countries that are there. And some of them, it's, I mean, it's huge, the amount of effort they put in and resources that they put into it. So it is important. And of course, obviously, it was always, you know, it's the fact that many of these entrepreneurial types want to be someplace where they can probably do clinical studies right next door to a place called Mayo Clinic. And so, you know, it was always an honor to be able to be there and represent the city because, again, Gary did a lot of great work on it and got some of those groups together and where we met with them. And then it's, you know, making the statement that the city is behind this and really important that we, you know, invite and hopefully have some of these folks that come. So
one thing that intrigued me as I became aware of the opportunity is this isn't a conference where you intend to attend, set up a booth, and stand and hand out brochures.
Sometimes I'm understanding, you do that too.
But I'm understanding this to be much more proactive, terms of reaching out and meeting with other possible parties of interest. So I think that's a good step. Mr. Newman.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, this is in keeping with what we were trying to do when, we built the Biobusiness Center, and there's also been $5 million in sales tax money that's been allocated to help startup businesses that, the city's provided, and we work with Ready on that. So this is really in keeping, I think, with what we're hoping to do, which I think is growing very nicely. It's going to grow exponentially with this whole Discover Square idea.
Okay. Others, Mr. Bilderbeck.
I'll be the bad guy here. I got to ask the question because I'm being asked it all the time. We've seen now that some of these businesses are moving in and some of the older buildings that are being redone for the groups to move in. The question is, are we moving closer? Do you have any idea what it might be before a Discovery Square is built?
Mayo's wrapping that, you know, they're wrapping up their plans for that part of Discovery Square, but as we noted here, Discovery Square has already started. I mean, there are quite a few organizations and groups and buildings within Discovery Square that are actually doing just this kind of work, entrepreneurial work, innovative work, incubator type work, and so we're just expanding that, but you're talking about the Mayo part of it. I think we'll see that really soon. Some information come from Mayo.
Ms. Means and Mr. Wojcik.
I have a questions about what is the boot camp? How does that work? That was one. The other one was the promotion and marketing materials. It's real important, and Lisa, I talked with you just briefly about making sure that the public sees themselves as we promote our efforts as we move forward. And just to be very cognizant to be, you know, that focused on inclusion. That's very important. I was very disappointed with one presentation, not yours, but another one that was kind of a stock presentation. And we all participate right. in dollars and in energy, and we all want to see it successful, but we also want to see that we see our face in it as well.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing about the world of entrepreneurs is it is a very, very diverse group. So that's really quite positive and in keeping with what you're saying.
Thank you.
In terms of a boot camp, there's many versions of that. We were just talking about boot camp on the way over here. You might want to share the example that you were talking about.
So, Councilmember Means, there are examples of boot camps that are designed, for example, to help somebody pivot from one kind of work into a technology field where they do 3 months deep dive in learning how to code and how to do software coding. And it's really intensive. They come out of it with the skills necessary, and they are guaranteed a job or they get their tuition back. So it's really about preparing people in a very specific way to meet job demands for today.
You know, some of us think about boot camp in other ways, like military. And so I wonder if we could be more specific so that clearer.
Fair enough.
Okay, thanks. I have a couple other questions, but I'll pass right now.
Go for it. Go ahead.
Go on.
I'll pass right now.
Okay.
Mr. Wood, yeah.
In terms of where are we settling in terms of what do we expect to see for in terms of new office and lab space for square footage of initial build-out and final build-out in Discovery Square?
I think the plan itself right now calls for, if you saw that in the development plan, up to around a million square feet for okay. Discovery Square, okay. and that's still on target for that.
What do you think the first building that goes up, I assume it would be Mayo, just...
The one Mayo's?
Plan, yeah.
Something... I don't think it certainly won't be a million square feet. I think Mayo will start out smaller and then probably grow as the entrepreneur environment grows. As we start to build this culture, which is really important, I think that will help with the growth of that building, with the plans.
Any timeline for some updated renderings or conceptual layouts for how that Discovery Square and the park area will be? We'll be seeing some updates on that or some revisions of that.
I hope you'll see it soon. It's going through Mayo's process right now.
Any time someone with a Mayo background tells me soon, I tried to drill down on that a little bit. is soon, second quarter, third quarter this year?
It'll be this year, yeah. Okay. Mayo's going to come out loud. I think it'll be very soon.
You called yourself a bad guy. Yeah, right. The wording on there says introduce Mayo Discovery Square vision. Is that along the lines of what we heard here today, or is there more to that you'll be doing at Bio International?
Well, for sure we're going to introduce this kind of vision. And what we were meaning on that, Michael, is actually get people to understand that something is happening in Rochester. So it's the vision for Discovery Square and the entrepreneur environment and the medical science, bioscience industry.
All right.
We just want to be able to talk about it and start to introduce that to the companies that will be there.
And then one of the things that Patrick brought up was workplace policy changes at Mayo, but I'm curious if any of these types of workplace policy changes are something that the city as an employer and also as a someone who utilizes contractors as well, if some of these changes would be appropriate for us as well.
Councilmember Wojak, I would say that when we use the term workplace policy, then it really does not apply directly to one company or another. Really, it's looking especially at major employers like the city, the county, IBM, Mayo, and other major employers. What are the policies that encourage or enable entrepreneurship? And I know, Councilmember Campion, you have introduced an idea or a conversation around the idea of startup city, startup in a day, rather. The work that this body did in deliberating around food trucks is along the same line of how do we support entrepreneurship and how do we create a climate for that. So there's policies about how people get permitting, and there's also probably policies about how... And sometimes we don't necessarily think about a policy in terms of how it affects entrepreneurship, but imagine thinking about supply chain and where purchasing, policies around purchasing. And do those policies invite local entrepreneurs to be successful in selling their products, or do they inadvertently cause barriers or at least not enable local entrepreneurs to sell their products? So sometimes we don't think of a policy as sort of entrepreneur-related, but it does affect the local business community, the startup community in particular.
Last question. Do you think we'll see a groundbreaking for a new construction building in Discovery Square in 16 or 17?
We have the Conley Mass Building is under...
That's why I use new construction.
Incredible renovation right now, and you should do a walkthrough.
It's fantastic.
The progress being made.
That's what Vice said, new construction.
So I guess that's what we mean by the entire Discovery Square area. It's just broader than what people are initially thinking about a couple of blocks. Yeah. It's going on. It's already happening. There's great progress.
I would go out on a limb and say that my question was not answered there.
That's the only time your question hasn't been answered.
Yeah.
I feel honored. Yeah. I want to not answer your question.
All right, Mr. Ruskin.
I guess just two things to follow up on comments here. The Conley Mass Building, I have a lot of people have a hard time seeing how DMC can take a lot of credit for that. But
anyway, the real question I had was the introduction of Male Discovery Square vision. Lisa, you just mentioned that that's kind of a big thing that you're trying to do with this. And I guess I would think, when we're in year three of a $3 billion or $6 billion project, that we've had PR departments and marketing departments and all that out there, I would think they've targeted a lot of these organizations and groups that you're going to be meeting with at this and throughout the country. So I guess I'm a little surprised to hear that we're trying to introduce the Male Discovery vision to these people. I would think that a lot of them have already heard about it.
Yeah, so this is more Discovery Square in general, Ed. So Mayo's never been at this conference to be able to say, now we are creating a new space where all of these organizations are going to come together. Okay. That's really appealing to these companies.
So you're talking about more specifically the Discovery Square concept and not the whole DMC process in place. Which by now, most I would think everyone at that conference has heard of some type of a version of it.
You'd think so, but yeah. Okay. DMC still has, we have a lot to talk about in terms of the DMC. But for some of these companies to know that there's going to be an ecosystem created to support that kind of work in the environment, mm-hmm. that's what they want to look to. And they want to be able to see all those pillars of success that we listed. We can start to say, we are building that in Rochester. Come to Rochester, build your company here, and stay in Rochester. That's what we're trying to explain.
Okay.
So, and we'll be doing it with Mayo. So Mayo will be there as well. So they'll be working with us with these companies also.
Okay.
It'll be a good partnership.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Ms. Means.
Just have three brief questions. You mentioned the five pillars for success. Access to ideas, you indicated connect policy generators. And if you could just expand on that a little bit about how you're doing that. Then the housing options under the space and place, are you speaking specifically downtown or those housing options that may be available to service people? And are you connecting that with transportation so that if housing is on the outskirts, will there be transportation to get them downtown? Thirdly, I wonder with the Journey to Growth, and I only heard one or a couple presentations about Journey to Growth, and of course Ready has been very active, you know, long time active under the leadership of Gary Smith. But do you have any idea what are some of the outcomes? How are you working? How do you work together? I mean, you have different people working on different aspects. When do you get together to find out if you really are receiving the outcomes that you expect down the line?
So I'll try to take the last, I'll go 3, 2, 1. How's that sound? So the third one is about Journey to Growth and Ready and our partnership with DMC. And Gary Smith is here as well. And we were purposeful about that partnership. So Gary sits on our EDA board. He's a board member for EDA. And that's one way that we make sure that we keep those things purposefully connected. And DMC, of course, is working in this district in the downtown area, and Gary's working with Journey to Growth in the region to support those. So I would say, Gary, please weigh in here, that we're working hand in glove to make sure that one effort complements the other.
Yes, we talk two or three times a week, so if we see something's current, you know, we're telling each other. There's a lot more coordination, cooperation going on here that probably meets the public's eye. It's kind of happening more or less behind the scenes. And, you know, the fun part of being with the major project, and everybody will be standing up there, you know, celebrating that moment. So it's really not about who's doing what. It's really about what we're doing together. What we do together really matters more than what we're doing individually. Collectively, we have much more capacity to do good things for the community. So Sam, we're talking all the time. That's the bottom line.
So the second question you had was about housing and transportation and how connected are those. And I'll ask Gary, you might want to weigh in on this as well. But the transportation work, as you know, the city's leading the DMC transportation work. Mr. Freeze and Gary and company are providing leadership to that along with SRF. And I know that those discussions about how that works together with housing and how we need to make sure that transportation is critical to the success of DMC and, frankly, to the success of the city. So I believe that those conversations are just starting. The transportation work in five particular areas, they're just starting right now. And those, again, will be very coordinated.
Access to ideas. You connect the policy generators. How broad is that?
our meetings. This is really the idea, the notion that oftentimes in companies there are sort of different sort of silos or different parts of the company that don't necessarily interact with each other. So there may be people working on technology solutions that don't understand or don't know of a medical application, for example. So it's really how do we ensure that people who are creating new technologies can understand or see application outside of the domain that they were specifically working on.
All right. Anyone else? Well, circling back to our one of our opening questions, I'd like to ask if the council is supportive of the city's participation, specifically Mr. Campion attending and representing the city of Rochester as part of the what's being called Team Rochester. Ms. Mead?
I am very supportive of Mr. Campion participating in that bio conference. In fact, I think it's important that you include the council in some of the decision makings anyway, so that we too will know what's going on. And I think that's been something that hasn't been quite as transparent as I would like to see it. So I think this is a good forum to gather some collective voices and have some discussion. But outstanding candidate, and I thank you for volunteering for that.
This is peanuts. If he thinks it's important for the city, he should be doing it.
All right. I don't see anyone disagreeing, so go for it.
All right. Appreciate it.
All right. Anything else for this afternoon? Mr. Mayor?
I'm just wondering on that one of the first pages, that if this is a new force that's going to take on the agitator, differentiator, is that going to be racing in Belmont now? You got a horse in that race.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Bring back sourdough bread.
Okay. But not the starter, right?
No, maybe not. Next up, we have the Building Safety Department annual review.
Thank you. Let me just get
is that the conference?
Yeah.
Don't think so.
I just want to thank for the opportunity to come before you. And, I put together a couple reports. And I'm not going to, for the sake of time, I'm not going to go through in any great detail, but just hit the highlights on these things. I've included in the packet a copy of the PowerPoint slides. The 2015 construction permit summary report, kind of an activity report that puts comparisons since 2009. Also, a expenditure and revenue report, and then our Acela project plan update. I just want to introduce Susan Laguerre. She's in the back corner. She's our manager of housing. She's one of our staff members that was able to attend. Everyone else is very busy, and Susan was able to carve out some time. So she's there. With regard to, I'm just going to buzz right through. So if you have any questions, feel free to just ask, or we can wait until the end if you want. The Building Safety Department's mission statement is committed to advancing public safety and built environments through collaboration and community partnership, which results in safe, accessible, and healthy structures. And we try to instill that in our staff. We all truly believe that it is a collaborative effort, and we do. Statement that we kind of great. We do truly believe in a community partnership. We partner with Rochester Area Builders quite a bit and try to get make sure that all the contractors are working together on that. With regard to our staffing, our organizations and staffing levels, the Building Safety Department, we have 27 employees, full-time employees, with four divisions, plan review, building inspections, housing inspections, and our office services. We also have a couple part-time employees. We have a seasonal permit clerk that comes in during the summer that assists with the issuance of, with the review and issuance of permits, counter permits, for decks, basement finishes, garages, those type of things. We feel it's been very beneficial for our contractors and for the homeowners that come in to be able to carve out and have. We usually hire like an engineering student or an architectural student that comes in, understands the plans. And it's a good experience for them. It's a great experience for us as far as making sure that that work is done. We also have a housing clerk that assists with the addressing of expired certificates. And then we also have a part-time plumbing inspector because we are, our plumbing division has two inspectors right now. So he comes in on an as-needed basis. The activity reports, that would be, that's this sheet in your handout. It's basically a summary of what we had. In 2015, we issued 2,383 building permits for a total valuation of about $484 million. We issued 8,000 trade permits for about a valuation of 109. So, as you can see from the report, we've been very busy with regard to issuance of permits. Also included in your packet is construction and rental housing activity report. And this, I've gone through it and went through a study of the various permit types that we've issued and number of dwellings, number of multifamilies, number of commercial permits. And also added some comments in there for your use. I'm not going to go through that in any great detail. What it does show is that we've had a steady increase in construction and work load over the last number of years. I'm just going to hit some of the highlights. One of the items that is really unprecedented is the total number of multifamily buildings that we issued in 2015. We issued 33 new buildings, and it ends up to be 1,156 new multifamily units. And I'm not sure if you can see that very well, but 2016, so far as of the end of April, we've issued 401 multifamily units. The number that we issued in 2015 is more than the last 8 years combined. What we average is about 150 units a year, and that total that we issued last year is equals what the last 8 years combined. So
I don't ever recall seeing any numbers like this. Going a lot further back than that.
Yeah.
Maybe there were, but it's astounding to me.
Back in 2003, 2004, we had some like 400 or 200 units. It wasn't this magnitude. And it's continuing in 2016. We've had 401 units already, and at this point, there's no let. We've had a lot of pre-development meetings on multifamily buildings. We have a lot of them in the queue right now with regard to plan review, and there's still a lot of them that are in construction. In 2015, we construction inspections, we did 27,276 inspections. As you can see from the graph, that's a growing number. Rental properties, transition to that. This year, we had about 420 new use rental properties in 2015. That corresponded to an additional 960 new rental units. And we do rental inspections every 2 years. So we're in those every single unit every 2 years with a biannual inspection. So that number of new use in 2015 doesn't include all the multifamilies. Many of those are still under construction. So our number of rental properties next year is going to skyrocket, in my opinion. along the line of where we're at right now with the rental properties, we have, as of April, we have 4,800 or 4,900 rental properties with rental certificates at this point. So, and it's a it's a fluctuating number. It goes up because of construction, it goes down because people, the market's coming back for those single-family dwellings, so some of them that purchased houses in 2008, 2009, and they couldn't sell it, they're starting to sell those single-family dwellings. But the rental market is really, really hot. With regard to the total number of units, at this point, as of the end of April, it was 15,420 units. And as you can see, that's a steady growth across since 2008. Rental property inspections, there were 3,785 rental inspections, and that only includes initial, routine, and re-inspections. It doesn't include any complaint inspections. So an initial is where we do a new use, and it's the first time we're in that property. Routine inspection is when we do it every 2 years, and then a re-inspection is if we find corrections that are necessary, then we have to go back and do a re-inspection after the landlord makes corrections. So, citizen complaints, that's another area where our housing division deals with a lot of inspections. What I want to highlight here is the City of Rochester in July of 2015 put together a service request module. About halfway down on the page, there's a little button that says service request. And it allows the citizen to submit their service request. It'll take them to a module that actually accepts the service request. The ones that are circled in red are, you can't read it, but abandoned vehicles, if they're parked in the driveway, they fall under the building safety department. We have a rental property, and then we also have a trash and debris on a residential property. Those are the ones that we currently have active in the system. You'll see a number of other ones. Those are responsible. They responded by other departments, like the sidewalk and stormwater, and that's by Public Works. So what's really nice about this is it gives the citizen the ability to submit this request anonymously. They have to create a registered user on the Citizen Act, on the Vision Internet website, but that's anonymous. When they submit that request, what it does is that it sends us an email, and now we can go ahead and process us on to the inspector. So Susan will historically reassign these to an inspector. He will send that citizen an email saying that it's been assigned to this building inspector. When that inspector investigates it, they will find out what the issue is. Has it been cleared up? Are we sending a violation to the owner? What are we doing? So it really provides good communication between our department and the other city departments that use this and that citizen. So whenever you guys get complaints or any type of, we try to encourage them to go to our website to do that because it really provides them with the input that they need. We are also continuing to add to this list. We're working on work without a permit and unlicensed contractors and those additional types
of things. And where is this hosted? Who hosts this? I know it's on our website, but where does the sign up in that? I guess I know we didn't follow that part. Well, when they create an account, I mean, is this all internal to our
website? It's all internal to our Vision Internet. All right. And I think our Vision Internet is hosted on the board, but it's all within our website.
Okay.
There's no other location. Once you go there, you can sign up as a new user.
Right. So that's a different user set than the Excel one.
Yeah, completely different. Okay. And there's no interface at this point, okay. And what we want to do is build an interface because one of those